Hey everybody, and welcome to The Void, a show dedicated to filling the void between being an employee and becoming self-employed. Most people refer to starting their own company as taking the leap, as if they're blindly jumping off a cliff and into the unknown. This show is here to help you understand that it doesn't have to be that way. As always, if you like what you're hearing on the show, please do us a favor and help share The Void with somebody else who might be wanting to start their own company. We saw an opportunity to help others understand that self-employment is well within your reach. And just as our businesses have grown organically and by word of mouth, we want this show to grow the same way. So if you see somebody asking questions about starting their own service-based business, please do us a favor and send them a link to the show. I'm your host, Mitch Smedley, and with me as always is David Hilton.
You know, Mitch, I thought it would be weird not doing last week's because we split it into two, you know, and did it because we were both out of town, which was fantastic. I got a break from you.
Yeah.
I missed you. Just a little? Like, on a scale of 1 to 100, like 0.02.
Yeah.
I missed you that much.
So like two lines on the tape measure?
Yeah. Yeah, one, maybe three, 1/16.
I was on a job with Spencer today, and we had to cut pipe, and like my hands are all muddy because I was in the, like, in the dirt working.
In the shit.
And so, like, I was calling out measurements, and he was cutting them. And I said, I need one 10 inches and three little lines. And he, like, went to, like, cut it. And then he stopped, and he was like, are you serious? I'm like, I'm just being like a woman.
That's not good. Don't say that. That's sexist.
Don't say that.
That's right. Sexist. How is Spencer doing?
He's good. He's gonna make one hell of a manager. It'd be good. He's asking all the right questions.
We'll see.
We'll see.
I shouldn't say that. I like Spencer.
He's asking all the right questions, so he's going to be good.
Get manager status, do good for 3 years, retire.
He could.
How old is he? I can't ever remember.
He's over 50.
Is he over 50?
I only know that because of the insurance breakdown. You hit 50 and insurance like doubles in price.
Yeah.
So it's weird.
Man, I tell you what. You know me. I think about retirement a lot. Mm-hmm. Not because I want to quit doing things, but because in case something does happen and I need to quit or I get old and I'm broken down or whatever, that I'm prepared.
Right.
You know, I'm kind of a worrywart.
Yeah.
You know, as they say. It seems to me like if you're between 50 and 62, no one gives a fuck about you.
Right.
You know what I mean? You can't get your Social Security. You can't get, when's Medicaid, 65? Or is it 62?
64, maybe? I don't know.
I can't remember. But it's like, I'll have the money at 50, but it's like there's this 12-year gap.
Yeah.
Where it's like, what do I do?
Yeah.
Do I just keep working and I go apply for a job and those people are like, this motherfucker's over 50. It's going to cost us a lot to insure him.
Yeah.
Like, I can't go on public marketplace and get, I mean, I can get it, but it's expensive as shit, right? When you're over 50.
Because it's income-based,
too. It's crazy.
Yeah.
No one ever talks about that. Like, what about the gap? They're like, no, you have to be a cog in the machine until you're almost dead.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy to me.
Yeah, that's a weird thing. Most people think retirement is not having to work anymore, and it's almost that. I look at retirement as enough money in the bank where I can live off the interest without touching the nest egg. To me, that's retirement. And then if I choose to still work after I've achieved retirement, well, then great. That's just icing on the cake.
Yeah.
But
I always think of it as if I have enough money coming in and I don't need to work so that the stress level is gone,
yeah,
then that's fine. And then if I want to sell fishing lures or open a bait shop or...
That loses $3,000 a month, but you don't care.
Yeah, or, you know, guide hunts or do something, you know, that I enjoy doing anyway.
Right.
Like, and that brings in some income. That's just a win-win.
Right.
Right. That's how I kind of view retirement. I don't ever see myself completely just stopping work altogether unless my body just fails me completely and I can't.
Yeah.
Because I like, you know me, I like to be outside. I like to be doing shit constantly.
Yep.
But the worry part of if I don't, that's what drives me to keep like looking forward. Well, how much do I need? Where's my money? I know this wasn't what we were going to talk about.
But don't worry. The government will make sure you stay worried, right? Because you got inheritance tax, death tax.
Why would I have to pay inheritance tax?
If you get an inheritance from somebody.
Oh, I ain't getting no inheritance. My mom's already dead.
Yeah.
That's gone. My dad,
that land's not cheap.
Bless his soul. I'll be lucky to not get a bill when he dies.
Yeah, maybe.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I, I will say my in-laws have probably done pretty well. I don't know. I'm not count. How about this? I'm not counting on anything.
Oh no, no, I'm not saying on it. But like, there's always the government will make sure you stay worried about it. Like, can you afford the taxes on the house that you paid off 20 years ago?
Yeah.
20 years later, can you still afford those taxes?
Yeah. Like that is, man, that personal property tax thing. They got to get rid of that. I know you can freeze it at 62 now.
Yep.
In certain areas. They got to get rid of it. It's mm-hmm. fucking insanity, man.
Or they just got to control. Like, I don't even mind the idea of the personal property tax, but they just got to find a way to regulate it or control it. Like, a person shouldn't go bankrupt paying taxes on the house that they paid off many, many years ago.
I don't think, I completely disagree. I don't think you should have to pay for anything. Like, I think what they should do is the sales tax formula. Like, the only way you pay tax is on things you buy one time.
Yeah.
Because then it's your choice.
Yeah, you're taxing the spenders and not the savers.
Yeah, whether or not you want to participate in that tax.
Right.
You get to make that personal choice.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to get to that.
Yeah.
Or a lot of people are, I don't want to say they're doomed, because they're not doomed. But it's just like, how much tax can you suck off of us?
Right.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
Can't we just live our lives for, like, I don't know, a month?
Yeah. It's crazy.
It is crazy, dude. It's fucking nuts, man.
So, we got two things we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about work-life balance, and we're going to talk about Google reviews. But before we get into that, I actually owe all of our listeners an apology. Because
I'm surprised this is the first one in 3 years.
I know.
Because you say a lot of stupid shit sometimes.
I say... stupid, like,
I'm kidding. I'm saying, you say sometimes what seems to be flamboyant things, but they're usually very factual.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. Like I'm not going to apologize for having an opinion on things or anything else, but this apology, it was brought to my attention by a listener of ours that I have a insanely high level of respect for. And they messaged me and said, hey, you guys were talking about the girl that got killed on the subway and you labeled the suspect as an illegal immigrant. And that was like 3 or 4 weeks ago that we were talking about that. And so I'm like, did we say illegal immigrant? Because like now I know they're not an illegal immigrant.
Yeah.
I'm like, did we say illegal immigrant or were we questioning it? Because I couldn't recall. And he actually sent me the screenshot of the transcript of the show. Like, some of the apps will provide you a transcript of the show. And so he sent me a screenshot of the transcript.
Yeah,
and
all the ones were our due.
And you question, we mentioned he's got 16 priors. And then I said he's also an illegal immigrant. And you questioned me and you said, well, we know she was a legal immigrant, but was he illegal? And I said, I doubled down on it. I said, yes, he was an illegal immigrant. Yeah. And this is not an excuse by any means. I don't know why I would have said it. It was not correct, right? The guy is not an illegal immigrant. He just had 16 priors and was let out of jail by a magistrate that doesn't even have a law degree. He shouldn't have been on the streets.
Yes, but he should not have been on the streets for a different reason.
Yeah. My only guess is
you probably gleaned that from something else.
I either gleaned it from something else or there was some misinformation floating around when that story was first breaking. Keep in mind, this story broke like 4 weeks after it happened. It's just the media was super quiet about it.
Yeah.
But as the story was coming out, somewhere I probably picked up that they were illegal because that was kind of the whole push, right? And so I'm sorry for that. Obviously, we're not a news station, but we are still a media to some degree.
We try to get things right.
But yeah, we want to be factual, right? Like, I want this podcast to be a place where I can spout facts and I can spout my opinions without judgment. But the last thing I want to do is spout wrong facts.
Oh, yeah, of course. Right? No, I'll give you this. Honest mistake.
Yeah.
Honest mistake.
Yeah. And super appreciative that it was pointed out because, like I say, I have a high level of respect for that guy. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to do anything wrong knowingly.
We won't say who he is. He has become one of my favorite people.
Yeah.
You know
what
I wish he would do is get his fantasy football lineup together.
You know, I wish he would take a trip to KC and get on our podcast.
He's going to. Okay. He's going to.
All right.
I'll bleep that out. Said he had to.
Someone said he had to. So.
Oh.
All right. So let's first talk about Google reviews, just so we can get that over and done with. So the original discussion that we've had on this podcast for Google reviews, if you go back to episode 36, that episode was filmed 3 or 4 years ago. And it is my complete playbook for how we do Google reviews. And we still do it largely the same way today. But it is worth rehashing again because Google has changed a lot of their policies over the last couple of years.
Yeah, they
and
have.
So some of that's changed. Basically, we were 9 months in business and got 200 five-star Google reviews. And I was our only plumber. And then... at about a year and a half in business, 18 months in business. No, I guess we were 2 years in business and we had over 400 Google reviews and still a 5-star rating. And so, our method works. We don't use a review service. It's not like a, Podium or some of these other services or apps that you can buy that will like automatically send the customer a Google review link after you leave.
Yeah.
That doesn't work. There's no response to those.
No.
And so what we do is our CRM allows us to customize the emailed invoice that the customer receives. And so we can say, thank you, customer first name. And it'll put, thanks Jim or thanks Joan or whatever their name is, right? And then we can put in whatever we want. It was an honor to serve you today or whatever. And so right there in that invoice, we have a line that says, if you feel you received 5-star service today, please click here and let us know. And the words please click here are hyperlinked to straight to our Google reviews.
Yeah.
It's a bold move. The perk of all those other review services that I was talking about that we don't use, those review services, they do what they call review gating. And what that means is, if you've ever been sent a survey, it's not a Google survey.
But no, it is not.
It's like,
how
would you rank all of our stuff on, 1 to 5 or 1 to 10 stars? And then if you give them a high enough rating, the survey prompts you to leave a Google review.
Yeah.
But if it's a low rating, then the survey skips that prompt and they bring it all internal for them to correct the issue or whatever else. Google hates review gating. And I don't necessarily agree with Google on that. So, but they don't like automated review gating.
They don't like automated anything.
Correct.
How about that?
Yeah. And so what we do is, we have that hyperlink straight to our star rating on Google. And in the very next line down in the sentence or in the paragraph says, if you received anything other than 5-star service, please send us an email here, and we've got our email.
Does it say send it here so we can correct any issues that you have had?
It says we greatly value your feedback, right?
Gotcha.
And so what we do with those two sentences is we split our customers into 5-star customers and everybody else.
Yep.
And both of those customers, whether you're a 5-star or anybody else, you feel now emboldened to go your path. If I had a great experience, they're providing me one-click access to leave a Google review. I'm going to tap on those blue letters and leave it. If I had a question or a concern about my experience, they're providing me one-click access to shoot them an email, and they tell me they greatly value my feedback. So now I'm going to get to sit on my high horse for a minute and try to act like I'm the boss, I'm the customer, and I'm going to go tell this business what my concerns are. Right.
Yeah, and you have to do it. You have to have one-click access for 5-star review. And tell me if I'm wrong here. People that are extremely satisfied with the service that you gave them, they aren't extremely eager to leave a response.
Correct.
For whatever reason. If you've pissed somebody off, they want a platform to sound off from.
Yes.
Is that still correct in
yes,
your business
that's
now?
Absolutely correct.
And that's why you have to split those up.
Yeah.
Like you do. And I don't want to kiss your ass. That was a great move, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know where you got that. I don't know if you invented it. Whatever. But giving them a direct link to sound off so that you can filter that bullshit out before it gets out to every other potential customer is really what's key in the Google review process that you've created.
Yeah. So I'll do take a couple of steps back, and this will help explain the why, okay?
Are you tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? The Void Podcast has negotiated exclusive rates for the Void listeners. This program's tailored for trade businesses like yours. And if you're using House Call Pro, switch and you can expect to save $80 for every 10,000 you process per month. Don't let high processing fees drain your profits. Visit empowerpayments.com/the void or call us at 913-423-1265 now and unlock your savings.
So 15 years ago, I was the manager of another plumbing company, and the general manager came to all the managers and said, we need to get on this Google review thing. All the other companies are doing it.
Yeah, it's starting to take off. Let's go.
And so he said, make sure you guys are asking customers to leave us Google reviews. And so we would tell the guys to tell customers, they'd say yes. Nothing was happening with our Google reviews. And so then the GM comes back to all the managers and he's like, guys, what the hell? We need to get on these Google review things. Guys aren't doing it. Well, we're telling them to do it. Well, it's not effective. Like, tell them more, tell them harder, whatever the case may be. Like, get them to do it. Tell them again, right?
General manager speak. Get them to do it. How do you want me to do that, sir? That's your job, bitch.
Right.
Like, okay, I'll figure it out.
And so this plays exactly on what you were saying, is if somebody's had an amazing experience, they still aren't eager to go out of their way and leave a Google review. And so...
No, they're happy. The process was great.
Yeah.
They are very comfortable with where they're at.
And so I was like, I don't even know if I know how to leave a Google review. I've never left one before. And so I got on the internet and spent like 10 minutes trying to figure out how to leave a Google review for the company that I worked for. And 10 minutes in and I still had no clue.
Yeah.
And I'm
That's
not
a problem.
And I'm not I'm not tech savvy.
You're not an idiot.
But I'm not a tech idiot either,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you're not an idiot.
And I'm like, there is no way our customers aren't going to spend even 10 minutes looking for this.
No, they're going to, you got 10 seconds.
Yeah. And so we had another manager's meeting. We were doing these like weekly. So this was like the third time where we knew it was going to be brought up. And so, the GM was like, guys, we're still not getting very good Google reviews. And I said, hey, Brad, we've got like 10 minutes left in the meeting. You've got your computer linked up to the TV in the meeting room, in the conference room. Can you, on your computer, can you go leave LBA? That's the company I worked at the time. Can you go leave LBA a Google review?
We call that gaslighting.
And and he goes, well, I don't know what you're getting at, but sure, right? We always respected each other and everything else. Open conversation. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he pulls it up and he's thumbing around. And next thing you know, there's like 10 or 12 people in this manager's meeting. Everyone's, oh, well, click here. We'll try that. Oh, click here. And nobody knows how to do it.
Did you finally stand up and be like, hey, what the fuck?
And so, well, I just told Brad, I said, okay, so obviously I knew you were going to struggle with that because I tried for 10 minutes and I couldn't figure it out either. Like, and he goes, so what are you getting at? And I said, well, I don't know.
that's bad on his part. He should have gleaned like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see the point we're driving here.
And I said, I don't know what the solution is, but I'm going to spend the next week figuring it out. And so, that's when I did my first ever like embedded sentence in the email.
In an emailed invoice.
Yeah. And so because I was on the management team, I knew the person that could get me access to change the wording in our emailed invoice. And so we first started out with like a really long link. And then we used to have to pay to shorten a link.
Yeah. Hyperlinks were they a buck?
Well, no, like to get a tiny link. And then, we evolved, like tiny URL, and then you can do those for free now.
Do it for free, yeah.
It's kind of like you used to have to pay for a QR code generator, and now those are free.
For context, for those that are new to the show, how long ago was that? 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Long time ago.
And so we embedded the first sentence in there, and I had a really long link, and I told, this went out to everybody. It changed all the company's emailed invoices, but I only told my plumbers in my team. And I shared an office with the HVAC manager, and he and I were in it together. But I'm like, don't share it with your guys yet. Like,
let's see what happens.
I'm not asking for the pat on the back, but let's just see if we get a surge of plumbing reviews. Like, this will be the beta test, right?
Yeah.
And so we did, and we got the surge of reviews. And so then the very next week, we hyperlinked it. We did the tiny URL and got a smaller link because people were still a little timid on clicking on a big long link.
Yeah. Back in the day, that was the red flag for I'm about to get a virus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then we very quickly evolved to the hyperlink. Our CRM at that time would let us do a hyperlink. So we did the hyperlink. And, our sentence wasn't as polished as it is now. Our sentence was something to the effect of like, you know, if you've had great service, click here and let us know or something. And so our number of reviews we started getting like went up by 1,000%. Yeah. And so now the guys could actually stand in a customer's kitchen, show them the hyperlink on the tablet and say, I'm emailing this to you right now. You, when you click on these blue letters, you're gonna see this in your email, right?
Did you, before this or after this, were the guys getting a spiff for a Google review?
No.
No.
No, at this time there was nothing.
Did LBA ever start doing that? We eventually did,
yeah. And so... So we basically set it up to where the guys could just indicate that, right?
Yeah.
And now it's evolved a little bit more, and I'll get into that in a second. But then, so all of our review counts started going up, but so did the bad reviews. And so that's where it's like, okay, one-click access to leave a review is highly effective. However, we need to split our customers up.
We have to build a filter.
We got to build a gate without review gating, right?
Yes.
And so, so just like you're dividing up cattle to sell off part of your herd, you run them through the stocks and gate them left or right.
It's such a horrible analogy, but it's perfect.
Yeah,
it's
we're dividing up customers, you know, 5-star and everybody else. And so we started doing that. And then, I'll get to this here in a minute. But so once we split the customers there, now we started getting a lot of concerned customer emails and we started getting a lot of 5-star reviews. And so the system worked perfectly. And so that's like the development or the creation of the system. And this is a lot more effective than all, like your CRMs now have automatic, you know, we're going to text your customers the day after you leave and get a review link and all that. Like
that's
customers
bullshit.
Delete that real fast.
Yeah.
I know firsthand because I've had plumbers that work at my company right now. I've had plumbers that don't even mention the Google review thing because they know the customer is going to get it on the email, but half our customers don't even open the email.
No.
They just delete it because they're like, oh, that's the receipt from Smedley.
Yeah,
they just delete
already
it.
Paid.
Yeah.
No big deal. It's over.
And so, like, we know firsthand that to get a lot of reviews, you have to have the discussion in the kitchen as you're wrapping up the service, right?
I mean, and we don't only know that because of Smedley Plumbing. We know that in Tradewinds.
Yes.
Like, we have guys that are like, I can't get the reviews. Okay, what's your process? And their process is exactly what you said, except they don't ask for it right there in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And then guess what? We tell them, ask in the kitchen.
Yep.
Make sure that they open it. Make sure that they click on it to give you 5-star review.
Yeah,
and it's like, oh, okay. All of a sudden, I went from 100 to 175 in 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that hard. It's not that complicated.
Right.
You just, and people are...
Speaking of CRMs, FieldPulse is the field service management software for field service pros like you. Whether you're a small business looking to grow or a larger company that's ready to scale, it's got everything you need all in one platform. It's got advanced features to run as your CRM. It'll handle your estimates and invoices. It'll do your scheduling and dispatching. It'll allow you to provide good, better, best proposals. It'll handle your maintenance plans and your price book. It'll even help you get these Google reviews. Plus, FieldPulse integrates with the softwares you're already using, like Google My Business and QuickBooks Online. So you can hit the ground running without ever changing how you do the day-to-day operations. By simplifying your day-to-day, FieldPulse saves you time and keeps your team organized and gives you the tools to increase productivity, profitability, and Google reviews. It's not just us saying this. FieldPulse has earned a 4.8-star rating across over 600 reviews. So to learn more, head over to fieldpulse.com. That's FieldPulse.com.
And I don't want to get off track, but people are afraid of confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're afraid to ask those questions standing right there in front of the customer.
Yep.
Dude, be shameless.
Yeah.
You need to know, did you provide them 5-star service or did you not?
Right.
And if they're mad, they're going to click on it right there and you're going to see. And that's why people don't ask.
Yep. And so what we, what our guys will do, the guys that get a lot of reviews, they'll be like, all right, I'm going to email you the invoice. Can you go ahead and like grab your phone or wherever you get your email on and check it and make sure you got it? I want to make sure your email address was right. And so then now they're making the customer go find the email.
Yeah.
And then they'll say, like, go ahead and open it up. And then like in the message body, you're going to see those blue letters. If you go ahead and click on those, and then they'll stop and pause. And the customer's like, oh, he's not going to talk again until I click on it.
Yeah.
And so then they click
it's
on
intentional.
It.
The intentional pause.
Right. And so now they're staring at, you know, 1 to 5 stars.
And guess what? They don't want to create confrontation either.
Right.
And you are standing there they do not want to put four and then have to explain themselves.
Right.
Boop, five-star review.
Five stars, right. And so that's how we get the review. Now, our CRM currently, it allows the guys to edit from the field the description, the message body of the emailed invoice.
Yeah.
And so if they're dealing with a customer that they feel is upset or feel would leave a bad review, sometimes that happens, right?
You're in the middle of a repair, okay? You think it's going to be X. You get out there, it's Y. You have to add money.
Uh-huh.
Those people you know are generally, you can tell they're going to be upset because they're quiet.
Yep.
They don't say a lot, but they say, yeah, go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
That's your filter, right?
Some customers are just bitter, too. Some
people just hate spending money on their own stuff, even though it's not your fault.
Right.
They're just going to take it out on you.
Exactly.
That's just part of it.
And you get a guy that hasn't paid for a plumber in 10 or 12 years, and now something's broke, and he's too old to do it himself, and so he has to buy a plumber, pay a plumber.
Yeah.
And he's going to bitch about the price, and he's going to agree to you doing the work, and then if you give that person one-click access to a five-star review, you may be opening up a can of worms. And so if the guys feel like there's friction, they just go in and back that review link out. And they leave in the one that says, if you received anything other than five-star service, please send us an email.
Yeah.
In other words,
them their sounding board.
Yeah. We're giving you a place to sound, but we're not giving you a place to tank our reviews, right?
Yeah.
And so doing that got us to over 1,000 reviews and a 4.9 rating. So pretty awesome. And now we're at 1,260 something reviews and we still have a 4.9 rating.
I mean, this is one of those topics that you feel like you should dive into more and this and that. You don't have to. It is literally that simple.
Yeah.
We have 3 years of TradeWinds members to prove that that process works.
Yeah.
We have Smedley Plumbing. How long have you been in business?
I've got four different businesses that I've ran or managed using that process.
It literally is that simple.
Yeah.
Use that process and your Google reviews will go up. Do you want to talk about why Google reviews are so important?
Yeah. So Google reviews, they're important for a couple of reasons. One is how often you get reviews affects how well Google displays your business.
Yeah.
The more reviews you get, the better you show up in search engines. The more frequent the reviews you get, the better you show up. Your LSA, your Google Local Services stuff, local service ads.
Yeah, LSA.
Those, you perform, you rank better on those. We had a call today from somebody who they typed in Lee Summit Heating and Cooling. That's the name of a business near us.
It's in Lee Summit.
My LSA ad popped up above theirs. And this guy called us thinking he was calling them.
I don't want to get off to a whole tangent here. Maybe we ought to start heating and cooling, buddy.
Maybe. But what I'm saying is that's how effective proper Google review, collection is.
Yeah, proper Google review collection and how fast they come in, how frequently they come in, and how active you are inside of Google as a business, all of that stuff works together.
Mm-hmm.
And we have found that out together over the last few years, like how important it truly is.
Yeah.
And, there's a lot of misinformation going on. Some of it's inside of TradeWinds and some of it's on the fringe of the service industry about AI is going to take over this and that and Google's going to be gone and, all that stuff. And I've been doing a lot of research lately. People that Google don't want to Google, people that don't trust Google want to crowdsource, right?
Yeah.
But I think a lot of that is starting to switch back to Google because of Google's AI inside of their search engine.
Mm-hmm.
You can just click on that deeper dive. You know what I mean? So people that are over 40 to 60, I mean, let's be honest, those are the people that have money in this country. Those are our ideal customers.
Mm-hmm.
They are going back to that because of that AI.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, and I'm not going to say that Google is fair in the fact that when you search inside of that AI, they're not pulling off of anything but Google searches, but they are taking into consideration LSA.
Yeah.
All of that stuff is factoring into their AI, and those people from 40 to 60 still trust Google largely.
Yeah.
It's still, and when I say misinformation, there's been a lot of people saying, oh, it's not going to be as important to get Google reviews. And after doing some of my own research, I think it is, maybe it's dropped 10%. It's still extremely important.
Very.
Very, very
important.
Google
is still the king on that, right?
Do not think that, oh, AI is going to take over and I don't have to invest in my Google reviews.
Right.
You really still need to be doing that.
Yeah. The biggest advantage to Google reviews, and nobody will tell you this. I'll probably be one of the only people that will tell you this, but I tell you this from personal experience. The biggest advantage from Google reviews is customers have a perception of what your service should cost. And customers' perceptions of that service are always a fraction of what you actually charge. Okay? So where the Google reviews come in is if I've got 1,270 Google reviews and a 4.9 rating, and you read through them and they were talking about the excellent service and the excellent craftsmanship and all the experience and the not only just physical plumbing experience, but the customer experience that we delivered on and all of these raving things.
Yeah.
Then if I come to your house, David, and serve you as a plumber and you're like, good God, this fucking expensive, I'm lighting them up on a review or whatever. Well, now you feel like you're the one in the wrong. 1,270 people say this company's amazing and all of this stuff. You're like it's you against all those reviews that say,
yeah,
this company's amazing. So maybe I just thought they were cheap, or maybe I thought it should be cheaper than it was.
Yeah, Google reviews will carry your clout for you.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they kind of build that foundation of know, like, and trust.
Yep.
Without you having to do anything. And it stands on its own because they've already been listed.
Yeah.
They're there for everyone to see.
Yep.
It is the foundation of, I am a great business. Yeah. I provide quality service.
Yep. Exactly.
You know what I mean? You don't have to convince every customer anymore because they can literally look you up and in 5 seconds, boom, oh, shit.
Yeah.
That's a lot of reviews. And
yeah.
And I will give Amazon a lot of credit for this. Like their review platform, mm-hmm. like when it first came out, like it, people started really, you know, investing their research inside of reviews for certain products.
Mm-hmm.
And it has carried over to the home service industry,
oh, yeah.
which is largely affected by Google reviews
mm-hmm.
because you've got to have a website. You've got to be listed on the internet.
Yeah.
Like it's just a hand in hand thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think, even if it does die off in the next 15 years, dude, 15 years is a long time.
Yeah. Even if it's going to die off in 15 months, you'd still see me getting reviews all the way to 14 months and 4 weeks.
That's 2 years worth of income, worth of work.
Yeah.
Like, come on, dude. What are you?
Right.
Well, I'm just going to wait. And that's what lazy business owners do, and guys that really don't want to be successful. Say, well, I'll just wait the 15 months, or I'll work on this because that's not going to matter. Dude, come on. You got to take all avenues and
right.
run with them.
It's right.
Like, stop being ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. The Google reviews are, I mean, who knows what'll happen? You know, Google's a big, powerful company. They're not dumb. I'd imagine they're going to find a way to still be king for a while.
Dude, I'm telling you, we had that event in Vegas, and Jonathan Banister spoke about that, and he was great. Don't mm-hmm. get me wrong. I immediately started doing research, and literally in 45 days, Google went from their AI not having the deep dive AI
mm-hmm.
to then having the deep dive, and you could click on it. And in 45 days, like, totally changed my mind of, oh, Google's going to be done to, okay,
yep.
they're not that stupid.
Right.
And they have money.
Yeah.
Like, they're like Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Like, they could kill 27 people, you know, next week in Alabama because their product was shit, but it doesn't matter.
It's not going to tank the company.
Yeah, Coca-Cola owns Frito-Lay, and all, like, they're so big and so powerful, they will be able to figure it out.
Yeah.
Google's the same way. They figured it out.
Yeah. Yeah,
my opinion.
They'll get there. Now, what's crazy is now that you brought up AI, like AI search engines are becoming a thing. People are going to ChatGPT and Grok and all of those. And
God, I signed up for ChatGPT.
Did you?
Like, it was a cold day in hell, but I did it.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's fucking pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I hate that I love it.
Wait till we're off the show and I'll tell you the latest thing I did with it and you'll be like, that's fucking genius. So,
well,
it's not...
Is it? Let me ask you this. Just, you know, you and I are about transparency. Is it going to make me money?
I mean, it could.
Well, if it doesn't, I don't give a fuck.
But, yeah, so like you could go to ChatGPT and you could type in, like if you're a plumbing company and you're in a city, you could type in like, like, you know, who's the best plumber in this city? And it'll tell you based off of the information it has available, and you'll be alarmed. It'll be a bunch of these no-name companies that you've never heard of.
Yeah.
And so you got to look at where
Reddit is ruining everything.
Yeah, you got to look at where the AIs are getting their info for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, anybody has any questions on Google review stuff, before you email us in questions, just go back and ask, or go back and listen to episode 36.
And then email us.
Email us questions, because basically we do the exact same thing we did back then. The only difference is now I actually have QR code stickers on the back of all the guys' work phones. And so the email, everything is identical in the email. Hasn't changed that a bit. But now the guys will also, if they don't want to have the customer go find their email or whatever else, they can just hold the QR code out and say, if you'll scan this.
Yeah, it'll take you right to it.
And it takes you right to the star rating.
And it still amazes me. And I think this is a guys working with their hands thing that just are kind of, and I'm this way, are obtuse towards technology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't like it. Guys, you can get a QR code made for free.
Yeah.
For anything.
Yeah.
And then just pay
stickers
to have
are $2 each.
And then pay to have the stickers made, and you can put them everywhere.
Yeah.
Like you can have your company logo on a QR code and just stick it on your van.
Yeah.
Like it's amazingly simple to have QR codes created. And I think a lot of people are starting to get into it. Like even, you know, my in-laws, for example, this has been a month ago maybe. Like, you know, you can just turn your camera on and put it on there, and they're like, oh.
Yeah.
And then it brings up the little yellow bar on iPhone, and you just click on it, and they're like, oh, okay. And so now they're just walking around with their phone, like, boop, 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 boop. You know, just a little training. That's all. It's super cheap and easy to do.
We have COVID to thank for that, because that's when all the restaurants went to QR code menus.
Yeah, dude.
So.
Man, we're going to move on, but like right after, I used to go, you remember Mark, that was bass player in my band?
Mm-hmm.
He worked at Buffalo Wild Wings in Independence. So I used to go there all the time, and I love wings. I freaking love wings. So I would go all the time. Well, they did that, and then right after, like, they kept the thing out. Like, no mask,
yeah.
No nothing. And they were, like, trying to get away with menus. Like, they weren't bringing out menus. I was like, hey.
I want a paper menu.
Janine and I went to the one in Lee Summit the other day. They still have them on the bar.
Oh, yeah.
Stop.
Yeah.
You cheap motherfuckers.
Well, I don't mind. Just don't deny me a paper menu if I want it.
They don't deny you, but this little 3.5-inch screen does not hold all the information that I need to. I'm about to sound like a really old. No, I'm not. I'm not going to sound like a really old man. This little phone does not hold all of the information that I can readily blink and understand in 5 seconds.
I don't want to have to scroll through your menu. I want to be able to quickly assess it from a 5-foot view of, like, desserts are here.
Yeah.
Main courses are here.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to, like, scroll up and down to find it.
It drives me insane, man. My patience level for having to find information is very small.
Yeah.
And it's like, no. If it's right, that's why I have all my monitors. Man, I'm going to give some bullshit information about myself here. I have, so the two 4K monitors on my desk, and then I have a 55-inch TV on my wall. And it's so that I can have all of that information at the ready, and I can scan all of that landscape and understand 15 things in 5 seconds.
Yeah. That would be like living in your house and closing all the doors to every room every time you leave.
Yeah.
And then you got to open a door every time you want to go somewhere in your house, and it would just get, like, annoying.
I hate it, man. Yeah. I hated it. The COVID, the QR code thing, the fact that, like, they wouldn't give me a menu, like, it's still... It makes me sound like a bitter old man, but, like, it bugged me.
Yep.
Still bugs me.
Yep.
You can't tell.
Obviously.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Ugh. We got to move on.
All right.
What else are we going to talk about, buddy?
Talk two for today.
Is
work-life balance.
We talk about work-life balance a lot.
Yeah, we do. But it's important to talk about, because work-life balance is a myth. It doesn't actually exist in the form that you think it does. A lot of people think that work-life balance occurs on the daily, and it doesn't. Work-life balance occurs with intention, and it occurs, I'll say this, a lot of people think it occurs on the hourly, and it doesn't. It can occur on the daily.
It
can occur on the daily, but it's really going to more occur on the weekly, monthly, yearly, and life cycle. So what I mean by that is... There is no world where you can go work really hard for 10 minutes and then take 10 minutes off of work and expect results. Extraordinary results come from extraordinary amounts of effort and extraordinary amounts of planning and thought and diligence, right? And so this idea of work life, like, unfortunately, there's a lot of lazy people out there that wanted, you know, they wanted more work-life balance. And so they demanded from their employers that we have, like, game rooms and break rooms and beanbag chairs and free food and, you know, trendy looking break spaces and all of this stuff, right?
Yeah, that is false.
And so businesses put all of that in and productivity didn't change, right?
No.
And so the reason why is because those people are looking at work-life balance on the micro instead of the macro. They're trying to have a balanced hour or a balanced 8 hours. And that's not the way that it works. At the most granular level.
Ooh, granular.
The most basic level. You're going to go to work for 8 to 10 hours and you are going to give it your all for those 8 to 10 hours. And then when you make the decision to unplug from work, you're going to plug into life, right? Whether that's family, I don't know if you're single or married, you have kids or whatever, but like
it doesn't matter.
Life, right? Whatever life is for you, that's what you're going
to
do.
Yeah. Or whatever you enjoy. Another way to say it.
And so in other words, think of it like it's not a balanced scale reads zero. You take one of those old scales, right? That not like a digital scale, but like the old pendulum scales.
Yes, understood.
a balanced scale reads zero. That means you're going nowhere in life and you're going nowhere in your work. And so if you want to go somewhere in life, you need extraordinary attention to your life. If you want to go somewhere in your workplace or your career, you need extraordinary attention there. And so the way that I look at work-life balance is like go all in, go hard, and then when it's time to check out, check out. And so like right now, and this will actually happen today, as we draw into the end of summer, fall's here, weather's cooling off, our number of lake days are now dwindling, right, as the season goes away.
Oh, yours are. Mine are going up.
Yeah, yours are going up. Mine are dwindling. And so so we try to get out on the water as much as we can, as often as we can, and all this. And so like tonight, we're going to go out on the water and we're going to get out there as early as we can. But my boys know that up until 5 o'clock, we may have to throttle down, shut down. I might have a phone call. I might have something. And that's because I've told my boys that like it's work until five, life after five, right? And they know this. And so it was a friction thing at first, because they would get frustrated that I'd have to stop and take a phone call or whatever. But I honor my word. And at 5:01, 5:02, 5:03, whatever, like phone off, I don't need to answer that. Not until tomorrow. Right. And so I'm all in on work when work is there. And then I'm all in on play when play is there.
Yeah.
And so I know you just got done doing some travel. I just got done doing some travel. My wife and I took our youngest son to Zion. I was corrected on this. It's Zion National Park.
Thank you, Charles.
Yeah. It's like you don't call them a lion when you go on a safari, right? They're a lion.
I didn't think about it, but yeah.
Yeah. And so so we went to Zion National Park and we hiked for a couple of days. And I mean, you don't really have a choice to skip work there, because even the closest town is Springdale.
No, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. The closest town, the signal's not all that great.
Yeah.
You get into the park and there is no signal. None.
Yeah. You know what? Good.
Right. Right.
Good.
Forces work life balance. You're not going to go scrolling on your phone when you don't have cell signal, right?
Good.
And so like we go hard at work, but then we go hard at play. And so like just a quick visual, we didn't want to take our kid out of more school than he had to. We were already taking him out Thursday and Friday of last week.
Yeah, your kids need extra school.
So we let him, like our flight wasn't, we left the house at 3:00. 3:30. So he got home from school. We immediately jumped in the car, went to the airport, caught a flight. We didn't get to our hotel until 3 a.m. Kansas City time.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's, let's be honest, that's playing hard.
Right.
Like, if I want to get to my destination, whether it's home, whether it's away, whether it's whatever, it's going to take me extra effort to make that happen.
Right.
People always want to think of it as, no, I'm going to sacrifice my work schedule.
Yeah.
To make that happen. No, you have to sacrifice whatever it takes.
Yeah.
To make that happen.
Yeah. Daniel got a full day at work. I got a full day at work. Grant had a full day at school.
Well.
Yeah. And so then we did play after that, right?
Yeah.
And so we went hard. Like, I mean, obviously 12 hours of travel to get there is hard. But then we had 2 days in the park. Both day, like we did two of there's two prestigious hikes you can do in Zion, and we did both of them. One of them is a lottery drawing to get into, so we were lucky to do both. But we drew the permit. It's free. I think it's like $5 or something.
Yeah, but it's limited access.
Yeah, so limited access. There's a spot in Zion called Angel's Landing, and it's a very technical hike. The first part of it is you don't need the permit for, and it is a very physically demanding hike. The first part goes up like 1,300 feet in elevation in like 4 miles.
Did they
all
make it?
We all did.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the permitted portion of the hike is incredibly technical. They have metal poles driven into the rocks and chains going from pole to pole.
So you can hold on.
And if you let go of that chain, it's a 1,500-foot freedom fall that is not even painful at the end because you splat so fast. Like
that's
there's,
good.
There's part of this trail.
I don't want to suffer. I just want to die.
There's part of this trail that is not like if I stretch my hands out, the trail is narrower than my hands, and my hands are overhanging 15-foot cliffs on both sides.
That's fantastic.
And they've got like little steps carved into the rock and stuff like
my
that.
My wife wouldn't make it.
Yeah,
she'd give up. She'd be like, "Nah, and, I'm not doing it."
And so we drew into that trail. We enjoy our time and our hike and everything else. And that's, I mean, going up 1,500 feet and down 1,500 feet.
Dude, it's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a hike.
It's a lot, right?
What's the elevation there? Is it pretty low still?
I don't know. It's
like your lungs aren't burning.
Let me look it up, actually. No, there's elevation.
It's not like doing that hike in Colorado.
Springdale elevation is 1,335. So not actually all that high.
Yeah. Well, it's close to the desert.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's not that high. So at least you can breathe.
Yeah. Let me see what Angel's Landing
elevation I'm not discounting the severity of it. I was curious. Like,
yeah.
Is it also like your lungs are on fire?
So here you go. Angel's Landing. Angel's Landing, the peak of Angel's Landing is 5,790 feet.
Damn.
That's so
4,000 feet.
Right. Well,
from the base to where you're hanging out to up there.
Well, Springdale's the next town.
Oh, okay.
And so you're literally Springdale's downriver from
So you're from the park. Feet from
and
there.
So you you're climbing 1,000 feet in elevation just traveling to get into the park probably.
What was the weather like?
I
don't want to get you off task of what we're talking about, but
so
we haven't seen each other in 2 weeks, so I don't know.
The day we arrived, it was like 94 that day. The first day there it was like 96.
Fuck.
The second day there it was 74.
Perfect.
So the next hike we did, so that was day one. We drew into that permit and did that day one. And that wiped Danielle out. Like, she went to bed at like 6:30 that night. And Grant and I were...
You act like that's different than any other.
No, I know. So Grant and I went out on the town and found a local watering hole and had fun, right?
Did you give him his first beer?
No, but he was like, "Dad, you're flirting with the waitresses a little too hard." I'm like...
Yes, son, I am. Keep your mouth shut.
I asked them what their names were. That's flirting. Well, you smiled when you did it. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm nice. Like, something tells me,
boy, you best redneckinize.
19-year-old waitress doesn't want anything to do with 43-year-old me. So,
no offense. No,
right.
You are correct 100%, sir.
But so Grant and I went out of town and found a place to eat and hung out. Whatever.
Oh my god.
So the next hike, they have a hike called the Narrows, and this is all the way up at the end of the park. And this is the Slot Canyon that essentially forms Zion National Park. And when I say Slot Canyon,
it's tight.
It is tight. There's parts of it 50, 60, 150 feet wide, something like that.
Is it one of the ones where you can walk in the bottom of it?
Yes.
Because of the creek's way down, but when it floods, it's all like you would drown.
Yes.
And it, as you look up, it's like there's a 2-foot narrow gap that's 60 feet above your head.
So take that. And at the beginning of the narrows, it's probably 150 feet wide. And the cliff walls are 1,500 feet tall.
Oh, that's awesome.
The farther up you go, the narrower it gets. And there's a spot where two rivers actually converge together. And there's a bigger river and a smaller river. And we went up the smaller path. And that path is 6 feet wide, 1,500 foot walls above you.
Whew.
All shade, right? You're never in the sun there.
Yeah.
There's nothing on the floor except river. And you're hiking, like, literally in the river.
Yeah.
And so we rented...
Just a dry river.
Yeah, we rented waders and boots to do this because the water's 55 degrees and...
It's cold.
And you spend a couple hours in 55 degree water and you're hypothermia, right?
Yeah, of course.
And so these weren't, like, wetsuits or anything else, but...
No, they're duck hunting waders.
Yeah, 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 let's just get... I mean, they were actually really cool waders. They were very lightweight. Very lightweight.
I have a set of some really nice ones. They're fantastic.
Yeah, it was like a rain jacket, but around you, and it was cool. Yeah. But so Danielle is not able to walk as fast as Grant and I are. It's all of a sudden, like, you go back and look at my pictures, and the beginning of the hike, it's all sunny. Like, as you look up the canyon, it's blue skies. And then about lunchtime, there's clouds rolling in.
Oh, shit.
And so we're like, I don't know.
Is it going to rain?
Chance of rain was like 10%.
Are you with a group or is it just the three of you?
It's just the three of us, but it's the three of us with 300 other people that are all...
Yeah, because they're doing it as well.
Yeah, it's not a guided thing.
Gotcha.
Right?
Okay.
And it's every man for themselves, but the farther up the narrows you go, the less people there are because people are lazy or whatever the case may be.
Well, or scared the fuck to death.
Exactly. That
they're going to drown.
And so we get up to, we still have about a mile to go before the trail splits into the two rivers. And Danielle's like, hey, we've got a reservation for something else this evening. If you guys are wanting to make it to where you are and everything else, I'm going to have to stay here and you guys are going to have to go without me. And so she's like, I'll just stay here and enjoy the scenery or whatever. And so she stayed there and enjoyed the scenery. And Grant and I start walking. We get up to where the trail split and it starts raining.
Oh, shit.
And then
you know that can fill up like... instantaneously.
Yeah, so they give you warnings.
So do they give you warnings on your phone?
No, because there's no service. They don't even have a siren system there.
Oh, fuck.
And so they tell you they won't even let you in the narrows if the water flow is over 150 cubic feet a second.
Yeah.
And this is a cool thing. They give you a visual for what a cubic foot a second is.
It's a lot of water.
Well, what they say is the water flow of that river is usually 30 to 35 cubic feet a second. And they said what that would be is if you're standing in the river, let's say the river's as wide as this room, 12 feet wide, 150 or 35 cubic feet a second is 35 chickens running past you every second at the width of the river.
Yeah.
A chicken's about a cubic foot, right?
Yeah, just about.
And so that, I mean, it gives you an easy visual. Okay, 150 chickens running by me is
that's a lot more of chickens.
Than every second.
That's a lot of fucking chickens.
Every second, right? And so we monitored that. And they tell you.
Well, they tell you when you walk in, like, look around, be aware of your surroundings. This is what's happening.
And
if that water goes up 6 inches, maybe get the fuck out of there.
Yeah, and they tell you, like, if the water changes color, flash flood's possible. If you see debris floating in the water, a flash flood's possible. And if you see waterfalls forming over the canyon walls, flash flooding's happening. Okay?
If there's a waterfall on your head, you got to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah. And so Grant and I get up to the split, and it starts raining. And then we get all the way up to this waterfall that we were trying to get to. And all of a sudden, here's the massive crack of thunder, and it starts pouring. And Grant and I are like, we got to go.
We got to go now.
And so we had already been where we wanted to do. And so now it's just like, we're not running from a flash flood. We're just trying to get out of there, right?
Yeah.
And so we're going super fast. And
are you the furthest up, you think, or were there people in front of you?
There was another 5 to 8 miles farther you could have gone. But
oh, so there was probably... 30, 40 people up there.
There may have been a couple up there. So that far up, they actually have 10 stations designated where you can camp, where the river isn't on the river doesn't take up the whole bottom of the canyon. There might be a big sandbar or something, and they flag them on the map and tell you, like, there's usually a spot. If you want to make this a multi-day thing, there's usually a spot where
unless
you can camp.
Floods, unless it floods, then you're going to drown. Right. Yeah.
And, I mean, it hardly ever rains in Utah where we were at.
But there's no bailout either.
There's no way to get out.
You can't climb the wall.
No. They tell you flat out you're not going to be able to outrun the flash floods, so just seek high ground. They said most of the time when it does flood, it's like 3 to 5 feet. And so if you can get 10 feet above the water level, you're fine. Big boulder or something like that. Just climb up on that. Right.
Yeah, if.
And so Grant and I start hauling ass back. And I mean, we're getting soaked. We don't have rain gear. We just got the waders.
Yeah, which are filling with water.
From the top side.
That sucks.
Right?
God, that's awful.
And so we get down to, we're getting around the area where we should be running into Danielle, and we run into Danielle early. And it turns out she went up river towards us and got underneath an overhang to hide
where
from the rain.
Raining. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. To hide from the rain while she was waiting on us.
Hey, I never thought that Danielle was smarter than you, but guess what? Maybe she is.
And so she's freaking out. She's obviously very scared of the flash floods. And she
is very dramatic. Let's be honest. Yes.
And I'm like, I think we're probably okay. Like, yes, it is raining. Yes, the water level's probably going to move a little bit. But I mean, I think we're good.
Let's just get out of here.
Yeah. Like, we're leaving anyway. Right.
Yeah. Let's go.
So while we're sitting there, taking a breath.
Yeah.
I mean, you're putting out tons of calories. So you're eating little
having
snacks.
Having a little water.
Yeah. While we're sitting there. All of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see this white thing. A waterfall appears from nothing over the canyon wall right in front of us.
Oh, shit. We got to go now.
And it wasn't like a trickle of water that got bigger. This was a literal flash flood that happened 1,500 feet above us.
It
was
shit.
A wall of water going down a dry creek bed.
Yeah.
And it went from dry to rushing in an instant. And this waterfall just shows up over the wall. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And like, I'll show you pictures after the show. But like, I've got pictures of like, you know, here it was at this time and it's blue skies and it's beautiful. And then here it is like an hour and a half later and there's a waterfall there. And so we're like, oh crap. And so we're taking pictures of these waterfalls. And I wish I would have taken more.
I'm taking pictures of these waterfalls. That's not what I do. I turn my phone on to video. I hit record.
Yeah.
I show them as I'm walking the fuck out of there.
Yeah, that's basically what we were doing. But like, I wish I would have taken more time to, there were a lot of cool pictures to take of this flash flooding as it was happening. Waterfalls were coming over the canyon walls everywhere. And I got 3 or 4 of them. And I think I got the biggest one I saw. I got it. But I wish I would have taken a little bit more time because when we entered the creek, the U.S. Geological Service like has meters on this.
Oh, yeah.
So when we entered, it was flowing at like 33 or 31 cubic feet a second. When we left, it was flowing at 80.
Oh, shit.
And that happened within an hour. Like it went from 30 to 80 in an hour. An hour and a half after that, it was like 190 something.
Damn.
Yeah. So
what are the chances of someone going there and then seeing one of the 5 rainfalls a year?
Right.
Like where that, like that's pretty cool.
Well, it rained on us both days, actually. And a couple of people that follow me on social media, like were tagging me in posts that live in Utah. And they were like, dude, can you come to Utah more often? Like we haven't had rain in forever.
Yeah.
And the 2 days you're here, it's pouring.
Dude, people are saying the desert's shifting from west to east.
Yeah, maybe.
Like we've been in a drought here for 4 years.
Yeah. But we end up making it back. And, you know, all safe, all good, just a little bit scary, but like,
not scary, like, okay, nerve wracking, but at this, like after you were sitting at dinner, you were probably like, that was a pretty cool experience. Like, that was pretty badass.
It took Danielle until yesterday for her nerves to calm down and actually appreciate
she's
that.
Not normal.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
So, but like for a normal person, like at dinner, you're like, if you and I were there,
yeah,
we would be like, dude. That was cool as fuck.
Yeah, like I was looking at it like this is cool because like what are the odds of this happening? Yeah. Like nobody else got this experience.
Zero.
That attended Zion that
1%
year.
1% of the people in the United States have seen that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, something like maybe less than that.
And so like we rented, you're not allowed to drive cars through most of the park. It's either shuttle buses or e-bikes or biking or walking, right?
Dude, those e-bikes are cool as shit. My neighbor's got one. He's let me ride it. It's badass.
So when in the park, they do not allow you to have a throttle on your e-bike. And so they've got like an intelligent mode where it senses you pedaling and it applies it.
Yeah.
So you have
helps
to pedal the whole time,
yeah.
Right? And so it is a 9-mile bike ride from where we entered into the water to the edge of the park. In that nine, and we're going 20 miles an hour on these bikes,
yeah,
right? In that 9 miles, by the time we get to the end of the park, the entire river is like chocolate brown. It was crystal clear water when we got into it. You could see every rock you were standing on.
Yeah.
Now it's chocolate brown and rolling, right? And we talked to a couple of people and they were like, what's funny is you get all the way down into the town of Springdale, and the river will be clear again. Like all that sediment actually settles down out of the water between here and the
sediment
town.
Sediment just moves.
Yeah. And sure enough, no, you get into Springdale and it's rolling brown water there.
So there's a lot of
and so all the residents in Springdale are like, dang, it must have poured hard up in the park today.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that was quite the experience. And then of course we have a long travel day home. We had to get up at like 6 a.m. And we didn't get home until 9:45 at night, Kansas City time. But again, heavy travel day, 2 rigorous days in the park, heavy travel day home. And that was Saturday. And then we took Danielle's brother and sister that were in town from California, took them to the Chiefs game Sunday. So, I mean, it was like boom, 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 boom. Like
Lucas was here?
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
I like the shit out of Lucas.
He might even still be here. I'm not sure. But
good kid.
Yeah. We took him to the Chiefs game on Sunday. And so,
thanks
like,
for the invite.
It was 5 days of like all day, hard day, go, 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 go. But that's work hard, play hard.
It is work hard, play hard. So I was out of town. I went out of town, and I won't go into as much detail, but I went out of town last Wednesday. Same thing. I got up at, I think, 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
We left. We drive 4 hours down to the lake. Me and my brother do a fishing tournament. We try to do one a year. It's just, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of stress release because it, for me, it allows me to still be mentally engaged, but not on what I'm normally engaged on.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows me to disconnect in that way. And I only feel relaxed when I have a lot of physical tasks to do,
mm-hmm.
right? So we get down there at 1, immediately go fishing, take my father-in-law, go out and fish, go to dinner with them that night, get up the next morning on Thursday at 5 a.m., go fishing all day to scout, mm-hmm. right? Go to bed, I don't know, 8 or 9 o'clock. We do that Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Sunday we get done, right? I'm exhausted. Mm-hmm. I've been up from 5 to 10:30 or 11.
And going.
In the sun.
Yep.
No shade, all day going.
Yep.
Like hard, right? I get, and this isn't their fault, but we get back Sunday at probably got back at 4 o'clock and we have to be home. Layla's got school on Monday and I don't like keeping her out of school. It's important to me that she be there and be engaged, right? Mm-hmm. My father-in-law is like, can you help me upgrade my locators? I'm like, yeah, 10 minutes. Dude, we didn't leave Sunday night till almost 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
So I get home Sunday, it's midnight.
Yeah.
I've been up for 20 hours that day. I'm exhausted. I am fucking smoked, right? But we got it all done.
Yeah.
Right? Get up Monday morning early, get Layla on the bus. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. One of the best vacations I've ever had.
Yeah.
It's the work hard, play hard scenario.
Yeah.
Like it just, people don't understand. And you know what's, I don't know how exactly to say this, but people that don't have that mindset don't understand it.
Right.
They're like, how could you take a vacation just like you did, like I did, and work so hard and then consider that vacation, quote unquote.
Right.
No, I'm disconnected from my day-to-day life, my normal reality, and that allows my brain to reset. Is my body tired? Yeah. When your body's tired and you're using it, that's actually better for you.
Yeah.
It's better for your mental health. It's better to push yourself.
Yeah.
And people that don't ever like get over that hump don't understand that,
right?
But it's extremely important.
Yeah.
They just don't realize it. You know, when I think of work-life balance, I think of it comes down to the completion of the tasks that you have to do, and then once those are done and once your obligations are met, you go as hard as you can on what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To move your personal life forward because your business life has already been taken care of.
Right.
You know, the priority is your personal life and your personal growth, right? But in order to do that, your professional life has to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
So you go with that as hard as you can, as long as you can, and when that section of work is done, you're allowed to pursue that personal life situation.
Right.
Whatever it is, whether it's going out of town, whether it's some people disconnect better when they're on the beach. I don't think that benefits people as much as they think it does.
Yeah.
What I mean?
I think that actually leaves like a hole in their soul. And what I mean by that is like you get people that go all the way to Mexico to sit on a beach and drink fruity drinks in the sun all day. And that's their vacation. And it's like, could you have played some Mexican music and sat in the driveway
and done the same exact fucking thing?
Done drinks, right? Like, you can't tell me that it was worth it to do all of that in a different location. Like, it's not the location that makes it worth it.
It's the experience.
It's the experience. Yeah, yeah. It's the experience, and it's what you did to earn it, right? Now, if there's a certain goal you've set for yourself, or maybe your company has set a goal for you. I used to work at a place where they would send you on vacations if you met goals.
And but you had to earn it.
You had to earn it, right?
Earn it.
And so at that point, now that you've earned it, yeah, they're like, spend it how you wish, right? And I'm not trying to say like it's worthless to go sit on a beach all day and do nothing. We all relax differently. But for me, I'm not the type of guy that can like go on vacation and sleep the whole time.
I'm not.
Why would I spend all the money to go sleep in Florida when I could just sleep here?
Oh,
you know what I mean?
On another level, I think you may have touched on something there. Like people that sit at home on the weekend and play video games all day, are they more satisfied? Are they happier? No, they're trying to disconnect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But that disconnect isn't, oh man, this is like psychological shit. It's not helping them.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They think it is.
It's a hobby of convenience.
In the short term, but it's not keeping them mentally engaged. It's not keeping them physically engaged while allowing them to disconnect.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Let's be honest, this podcast, when we started it, is for successful people or driven people. Driven people, highly successful people, people that want more out of life, do vacations like we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Their work-life balance is more like you and I talk about. You know, like, I got up all day, I worked real hard, I worked on my truck, I went and burned off my garden, my daughter came home, I spent 20 minutes with her, I went back outside, kept working in the yard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, their disconnect is, how do I say this? Their disconnect is more engaging sometimes than their actual work.
Yeah. I think it all is the intentionality behind it, right? We've all gotten up off the couch in an evening on a weekend or even a work day that maybe you were skipping work or whatever. And you get up and you're like, I haven't done shit all day.
And you feel bad.
And you feel bad, right. And so that right there tells you that you didn't earn the relaxing day, right?
Yeah.
Now, we got back from Zion late Saturday night, did the Chiefs game thing. You know, Chiefs game thing's a 12-hour ordeal.
It's exhausting.
Right. With all the tailgating and all the game and post-game stuff and everything else, it's a lot. And so last night, like, it's unseasonably warm here. We're in the 90s right now and sunny.
God,
it's awesome.
It should be 75. No, it's not awesome. It sucks. I'm ready for hunting season, man.
And so the boys wanted to go on the boat last night. And so I'm like, hey, babe, you want to go on the boat? And she goes, no.
Yeah, she wanted to sit around.
And she's like, I want to do nothing. Like, I've been on for 5 straight days.
Yeah.
Like, I want to clock out from work at 5. And I want to do absolutely nothing.
She's down there watching Hunting Wives.
Yeah, or
I haven't watched that yet.
She's got another one that's equally as risque, but it's about this person that like time travels back to the medieval times, and she ends up dating, like, she's banging one of her medieval relatives.
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
But, I didn't know that's where that was going, but okay.
But it's got about as many sex scenes as The Hunting Wives does in it. So
I haven't seen The Hunting Wives. Everyone keeps telling me that it's... Let me ask you.
Pretty good.
Is it a good show with lots of sex scenes, or is it just a lot of sex scenes?
No, it's a pretty good show.
Okay.
Yeah. It's one you can watch with a wife, and you're watching a girly-girl show without it being a girly-girl show. So.
Yeah, I'm trying to watch it. I got a 12-year-old daughter.
Yeah, you can't watch it with her.
Yeah, I know. Mm-mm. Well, no shit.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, it's hard to even find those times to squeeze it in, and we haven't.
I do want to hit on this a couple of different ways, because some of you guys that are listening to this show, you have small kids, and you're trying to envision, how do I pull off work-life balance? When you have small kids, work-life balance is, for one, you're teaching your kids a lot about accountability and discipline and work ethic whenever whenever my kids recognize dad may have to take a call before 5, right? So they see that disconnect at 5 o'clock. So when you're working hard and your kid's asking you to throw the ball or whatever, and you have work to do, that I'm not saying snub your kid, but what I'm saying is, it's okay to tell your kid, like, I'll throw the ball with you at 5, but until 5, I need to be focused on working. So if you can leave me alone until 5, and then we'll go throw the ball from 5 to 6 or whatever, right? And then at that moment, it's phone down, out of reach, and you are giving your kid 100%. You just asked for your kid to leave you alone so you could put 100% of your attention on work. So now you need to go give your kid 100% of your attention for whatever you're committing to or promising to them.
I agree 100%. I will say, like, when it comes to work-life balance with, like, little kids, you're not traveling and having fun. If your work-life balance should be, or your vacation time, I think is what I really mean to say, is on a daily basis, at least it was for me. Like, when I would get home and I was done working, like, my vacation came every night.
Yeah.
Like, Layla and I would be outside, we would be, you know, playing and doing stuff and all that. Like, I didn't have to explain to her I was working. I would just say, baby, as soon as I'm done, you know, we'll be doing stuff. So my, you know, if you don't have kids, when you do have kids, like, those vacations and travels and all of that, they're on a nightly basis for you. And it will be extreme. If you completely invest yourself into them when you're not working, you'll have a vacation every day.
Yeah.
Like, that is fantastic.
Right.
I almost wish sometimes that I could go back to that.
Yeah.
You know, because now it's not, like, nothing on her, but, you know, she's 12, so she wants to do other things, and she's growing and having her own life, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get those times. But, man, when they're there,
yeah,
that's the shit.
Yeah.
Like, it's a nightly disconnect and vacation.
Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of times, like, last summer, Grant was getting big into fishing, and he'd hit me up and say, hey, can we go fishing tonight?
Yeah.
And I got a pile of work to do and everything else. And I'd tell Grant, like, give me until a certain time and then we'll go. Mm. Right. And so, in other words, that's his signal to say, leave dad alone, let dad focus 100% on work, and I'll get it all done.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to disconnect from work and we're going to go wet a line.
Well, you had set a precedent and backed it up. You said, you know, the first 5 times you said that, it happened.
Right.
And so then as a parent, I know we're talking about parenting here, but, you know, then as a parent and as a child, you know that situation's going to come to fruition.
Right.
When dad or mom says that's what's going to happen.
Right.
Like, you know, it's funny. You know, I talked about consistency on the Monday Motivational yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Like, be consistent with your kids.
Yeah.
When you say, hey, until this time, I have to work, but after that, it's your time.
Yeah.
Give it to them.
Right.
Like, you know, be consistent with your parenting.
Yeah. Honor your word, right?
Yeah.
And so then there's a lot of guys, too, that are like working all day and then they come home and they have to do the books at night. And they think, well, this is my work-life balance. I'm going to sit on the couch and do the books with the family.
That don't work.
Unfortunately, that underserves your family.
It
and
underserves
that underserves your books.
Your books,
right?
If you take that 2 hours and split it into 1 hour on books and then 1 hour on your family, you'll be more satisfied. So will they. Your books will reflect the accuracy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so, I 100% agree
so
with that.
So that's what I mean whenever that balance scale reads zero is no, you want that scale to tip to the work side and it is 100% work. And then you're going to take the work pile off the scale, and now the scale tips 100% to the life side of things with your family and your evening activities, and now you're 100% there.
Yeah.
And so the only way around this would be, like, let's say you got kids in sports. You could do some work-life blending when you take your kid to sports and you're letting your kid be coached or, you know, led by the coach, right?
Well, yeah, you're not engaged at that point.
You're not engaged, so you can bring the laptop, you can do the books while they're practicing the sports and everything else.
I do that on Mondays.
Yeah.
when we're done with our calls.
You know, you don't want to be that parent that's disagreeing with the coach or hollering over the fence or trying to coach your kid, too, unless you are the coach, right? But...
I yell at all their coaches.
Yeah, I got duped into, like, little league coaching because it's, you don't realize it's just the dads that are doing it. But then as we progressed farther and farther in baseball, like, I worked my way out of the coaching thing, and that was kind of cool to sit there and watch your kid get yelled at by somebody else.
It's fantastic
because they actually listen to the other person; they don't listen to you.
Well, your kid's getting yelled at, and you don't feel guilt.
Yeah,
because you know they need to be yelled at.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's awesome. So. The last piece that I'll say on the work-life balance thing is for those in a relationship, find some consistent way to spend time with your spouse in an unplugged environment. Danielle and I started doing date night like 2 or 3 years ago. We do it every Wednesday, like clockwork. It's just what happens. And we let virtually nothing stand in the way of it. Sometimes we do have to move it around a little bit, but the commitment to find time every week is still there. So, for instance, like when we left to Zion National Park, it was Wednesday evening. Like when we're normally on date night, we were on planes.
That's
so
okay.
Like that didn't happen. However, we did get our own date night the night before that. The night before we went on the trip, we got our own date night that night. Like we intentionally moved it because of that. But finding a time every week that you can set aside to spend time with your spouse, no kids around, no phones, like, go discover the person you fell in love with, right? That is huge because that does a couple of things. It opens up the lines of communication. Now you're very consistent. We're going to have this time. And so there's a lot of times or a lot of things that Danielle and I want to talk about, and it'll be like, we'll just talk about it on Wednesday because maybe we don't want the kids to hear it, or it's an idea that's not fully fleshed out yet, so we don't want the kids to hear it until it's ready to be heard or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
And so finding time to spend time with your spouse every day, if that's morning, like maybe that's morning coffee. Maybe you do morning coffee with your spouse or whatever the case may be. Like it's going to be different for everybody and everyone's schedules. It's going to be different, but find that time every week to where you can get a couple hours every week with your spouse.
Yeah.
Your spouse will greatly appreciate it. That for the workaholics that listen to this, your spouse will also hear, they'll glean from you how much you think about work. They'll glean from you how much your passion is in your work. And that will develop your spouse into respecting how hard you work, right? Where you see a lot of relationships go bad when businesses get started is the spouse doesn't, there's not enough communication between the spouses, and one person's working all the time to provide for the family, and the other person ignores how much they're working and just, you provide for the family, but you're never here, right?
Well, they're usually selfish turds, but yeah.
Right. And so, like, the best thing that comes from date night, at least for Danielle and I, is the overall, like, the overarching amount of respect that we have for each other for what we do when we're not around each other, right? Like, when I'm at work, she knows just how hard I'm working. And in all of that stuff. So, I'm not bashful about it. Like, date night's probably what saved our marriage. Not that our marriage was in an ultra bad spot, but
it wasn't good for a while.
It wasn't great, right? Yeah. And there's nothing worse than being married to somebody for 15 years and feeling like you got a roommate, right? Like, having a spouse that you can still smile at and laugh at and enjoy, like, you can tell them anything and, like, enjoy their company.
I love how open you guys are. There are certain things that I don't tell my wife because I know that it's not good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like no.
We literally hold nothing from each other.
Yeah. Well, you guys are a little nuts, too.
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
Yeah, you are. You going to wrap this show up, or are we going to talk for 4 hours?
No, we should probably wrap it up. So And that's all the farther I wanted to go with the work-life balance thing anyway, was making sure that you are designated with your kids and with your spouse. So,
agreed.
If you have any questions on work-life balance, if you're struggling to come up with date night ideas or anything like that, shoot us an email. All of our emails are in the description of this show. Find us on Facebook. You can message us. You can do whatever. Do us a favor and help share the show with somebody else who might need to hear this, somebody who's getting ready to take the leap and wants to start their own business. So that's the whole reason we built this show. That's why this show's over 200 episodes long, is we're here to help the trades community start their own business. So until next week, guys, we will see you later.
Thank you.